I just remember sitting in the hotel restaurant saying, I cannot go on like this. Whatever I've been doing the last 10, 15 years, that represents one era of my life, but I don't think I can ever do that again. I don't think I can preach as much as I've been preaching. I don't think I can lead as aggressively as I've been leading. I don't think I can shepherd as many people as I've been shepherding. I don't think I can do as many outside things as I've been doing. In fact, and then as I started allowing myself to think these thoughts, I started saying, I don't know that I'll ever step in a pulpit again.
That's how Bill Hybels nearly walked away from one of the largest ministries in the country, because he was caught up in crisis mode living, and it nearly knocked him out of church leadership. Hello, my name is Lee Strobel, and I'm your host for Defining Moments, Willow Creek's audio journal for church leaders. The dramatic story of Bill Hybels' brush with personal disaster could be the story of any one of us. There's something about ministry that makes its leaders especially prone to burning out. So we can either take steps to keep ourselves healthy spiritually, physically, and emotionally, or we can pay the consequences by ending up with a shrunken heart or headed for a ditch. Friends, this is one of the most important topics for church leaders to deal with. If you're finding that your heart is getting smaller and smaller the longer you're in ministry, if you find yourself increasingly resentful and angry inside, if you feel strangely attracted to escapist thoughts, or if sin is becoming especially alluring, then you might be living in crisis mode. And if you're not yet, then just wait. Given the pressures of ministry, it may just be a matter of time. Either way, the best thing you can do is to listen to this candid conversation with Bill Hybels, because he's been there, and he's lived to tell about it. Bill, what is it about ministry that propels some people toward burnout? It seems that there are a lot of people who are effective in what they do in ministry, and they're successful, and they're well-intentioned, and yet they end up in a ditch. Is there one factor? I know it's not just one, that's too simple, but what are some of the factors that go into that kind of result?
Well, like you say, it's rarely just one issue, one factor, one driving motivation that causes someone who's effective in ministry to wind up being ineffective, that winds them up in a ditch of some kind. Usually it's a very complex web of inner motivations, deceptive patterns, exhaustion, frustration, loneliness, a buildup of unresolved issues in their own personal life. But I'll tell you one thing that really complicates the life of an effective church leader, and that is the near addictive power of fruit bearing. You know, we're told in John 15 to go out and bear fruit, because if we bear fruit, by that the Bible means if we preach the gospel, if we pastor and shepherd people, if we disciple people into being strong followers of Christ, if we bear fruit, the scriptures say, our Father will receive much glory. By this is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. And so a lot of well-intentioned, effective church leaders give themselves to ministry and give themselves to preaching, give themselves to leadership and discipleship, and God blesses their ministry, and then they see lives change. Well, when you see God changing human lives and you realize you had a little something to do with it, you were a conduit of sorts, there's a tendency to say, I want to do that more.
There's a high there almost.
Sure, and everybody wins.
Right.
Well, how often are you involved in something in life where everybody wins? The text says God wins. He right. receives much glory, and he's delighted. The people win. They go from, as the scriptures say in Ephesians 2, from aliens to citizens, from strangers to sons, from those on the outside to those on the inside. So the people win, and, of course, we win. You know, because we feel used by God, we feel effective, we feel that God's delighted in what it is that we're doing.
And so it's win, 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 but there is a loss somewhere that can come.
Well, sure, there's never a halftime. The game is never over.
It's too important of a game not to give your best to.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Super Bowl, but you play it every day.
Yeah.
And I think after a while, your system has a hard time handling the octane associated with those kinds of miracles. And then the downside comes when you get that sort of addicted to fruit bearing. You start to take energy away from other areas of your life, You take energy out of relationships, and you take energy out of your spiritual life, and you take energy out of your physical life, your recreational life, and you just take all of the energy that you can muster out of all the other pockets of your life, and you put it all into ministry. And pretty soon, you're a candidate for a serious fall.
Well, when I introduce people at Willow Creek who are guest speakers, I try to focus on their special credibility to address the topic that they're talking about. And we could talk in the abstract about the things you've discussed, but I'd like to get personal in terms of your life, because you have a special credibility, I think, in discussing this, since you went through a crisis point in your own ministry, where you had a ministry for many years that was bearing much fruit, and yet 1989 came, and you hit a wall. And I think maybe it would be helpful, if it'd be okay to, with you, to talk about that as a way of communicating the real life cost of what can happen.
All right. It's true, Lee, and I'm not particularly proud of it, but I did, in December of 1989, sort of come to what I can best describe as a kind of emotional breaking point, where I could no longer continue doing ministry the way I had done it in the past. For whatever reason, I had had about a 15 or 16 year run of effectiveness in ministry that I don't even completely understand. Sometimes I think it's just the humor of God. Sometimes I think it's the collection of grace of the people who God has surrounded me with. Sometimes I think it's just a divine act of God's sovereignty. I don't know. But from youth ministry days to starting Willow Creek, and for just a whole long run, my life was, it just seemed that what I gave myself to in ministry resulted in lots of fruit. Baptisms, discipleship, small group formation, spiritual gift discovery, stewardship responsibilities being taken seriously, people thriving and walking with Christ. And so as the church kept growing, we kept adding more services. Pretty soon we didn't have one weekend services. We had two, then three, then four. We didn't have one midweek service. We had two midweek services. And there were speaking opportunities for me to bear fruit around the country and around the world. There were book writing opportunities for me to bear fruit through publishing. And
sounds like win-win-win-win-win.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I thought God is being glorified, people's lives are changing, and I'm feeling useful. And then one fateful Saturday came. I'll never forget it. It was in December of 1989. And I had my weekend services that I was trying to finish my message so I could speak at them. And in a couple hours, I had a large wedding that I had to do in our chapel that I was not adequately prepared for. The previous night, we had had a raucously fun Christmas party here at the church with the staff that had kept us here past midnight. And I got partway through trying to finish my message, and I just felt a kind of, the best way I can describe it is like a watch spring in my spirit snapped. And I burst out crying all over my desk, first time I'd ever done anything like that in all my life. And I just had that sense, something inside of me just broke, and I don't have a clue what it is, but I don't have time to figure it out now, because I got a message that needs to be finished, and I've got a wedding that I need to do. So, believe it or not, I just sort of mopped up and kept pushing, and I finished that message, and I did that wedding, and I did all the weekend services. We had Christmas Eve coming up. I don't know how many services we had, half a dozen or more Christmas Eve services. I spoke at all of those. But I had a family vacation coming up, and I thought, on that vacation, I'm going to figure out what happened.
Yeah, there's your chance to recoup a little.
Exactly. And I thought, probably all I need is a few days in the sun. So I took my family down to Florida, where we were going to have a little getaway time together. And even down at that beautiful resort in Florida that a friend had arranged for our family, I realized when I got alone to be by myself that this was more serious than just needing a few days off. I just found it, you used the expression earlier, that I'd hit a wall. That's what it felt like. I remember taking out a spiral notebook, and I was starting to write stuff down, saying, what is happening to me? I think I'm in a new place, in a new era that I don't understand. And about all I concluded at the end of that week of vacation is I wrote this phrase down. The phrase said, the way I've been doing the work of God has been destroying God's work in me. And
what a realization to come to. I mean, it must have taken the wind out of you.
It was one of the... I mean, it was a revelation of sorts. But I think that's what created that picture of a black hole for me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if God's work in me is going to be destroyed, I will pump gas. I'll go back to the marketplace. I'll sell produce. I'll do whatever I need to do. I don't want to spend the next 20 or 30 years of my life in spiritual ruin. The reason I got into ministry in the first place was because God had changed my life, and the love of Christ had ambushed me. And when I found out that salvation was a gift and that I mattered to God, I mean, it just drew me into the family of God, and it drew me into the challenge of ministry, and it made me want to tell everybody about it. And the work of God in my life was paramount. And here I was with a great big church on the outside and a beat-up, dilapidated little church on the inside of my heart.
Mm.
And the distance between those two, you know, the fact that there was external fruitfulness and bigness and success and internal ruin, the dissonance of that just beat me up. And so I just came back from that vacation realizing we were heading into a new year. We were at the front end of a $24 million building program here at Willow. And we weren't in any kind of team teaching thing, so I was teaching every weekend and every midweek and had no one else lined up to give me any relief along those lines. I was limping badly in my spirit and saw no help on the horizon, and it was a dark day.
There's no way you could push the pause button and say, I'm just going to check out for a little while and recoup. I mean, there was a ministry. There is something happening tomorrow and the next day and a service the next week that you had to focus on.
Yeah, you know, as we say, weekends roll around with amazing regularity, and so do Wednesdays and Thursdays, and so do staff meetings, and so do payments to banks and all of that. And I realized I was on a treadmill. I couldn't get off. And it was destroying me.
That's not the man I see. I mean, something has happened in the interim between 1989 and today. I see a lot of healthiness today. Well, let's look at what areas of your life that you've, by your own admission, have mismanaged, in effect, before 1989 to sort of bring you into that situation, that maybe we can draw some principles out of and learn from in terms of avoiding that kind of situation ourselves. And one of the things you talk about is you use the term crisis mode, that you had ended up living in crisis mode. What is crisis mode?
Well, I define crisis mode as that pace of life that demands that you use all of your spare moments figuring out ways to keep your plate spinning and all the balls that you've been juggling in the air. In other words, it's when you're going from deadline to deadline, meeting to meeting, quota to quota, and responsibility to responsibility. There are no margins in your life. I realized that I had allowed the pace of my life to get going so fast that without my even knowing it, I use this imagery, I hope it's understandable, I neglected matters of the heart because of all the urgent matters that I was paying attention to with regard to the externals. Due to the pace of my life, due to being in this crisis mode, as I call it, I had neglected the infilling of my heart with that which would expand my heart. And so, I'm not proud of saying this, but I think it's true. I had a bigger church, a bigger staff, bigger effect in publishing, a bigger ministry outside Willow. Lots of bigger things happening in and around my ministry, but I had a smaller and smaller heart to show for it all. And when I realized that I was experiencing this, you know, shrunken heart syndrome, I realized I was not doing life right. If doing ministry necessitates the shrinking of my heart, then I'm doing ministry wrong. Mm-hmm. If the pace of my life is such that it necessitates the shrinking of my heart, the pace of my life is too fast. And so I ask myself, okay, how am I going to get out of crisis mode?
You talk about getting out of it. Is there a course correction, a dial that you can turn slightly in your life to kind of regain the right course, to breathe life in, that your heart begins to get bigger and so forth? I mean, are we talking about a course correction, or are we talking about a radical change in the fundamental way in which you approach life?
Well, I like your imagery of turning the dial, but I have found that when you live in crisis mode for as long as I did, and the pattern gets as ingrained as it had gotten ingrained in my life, you can't turn the dial slightly, mm-hmm. as your question suggested. Yeah. It's major overhaul time. It's taken the dial off the piece of equipment, and it's taken the equipment apart, and it's retooling the guts of the machine. Because something fundamental has to shift in your values, something fundamental. You have to come to the point where you say, the size of my own heart in the final analysis is more important than the size of the external things that I tend to put my energies toward.
It's that priority. If that's the starting point, that's the priority initially.
Right. I ask myself this question. Would I want to stand before God someday with a great big church and a pea-sized heart?
Hmm.
No. That would be the ultimate kingdom embarrassment. I want to stand before God someday and say, the one thing that I paid appropriate attention to was our relationship. That the church in my own heart was well shepherded. That you were full and free in me. That we walked closely and that I did your bidding. And that we had a father-son thing going that was real and was full and free. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, when I really came to that fundamental change in viewing ministry, I had to make some sweeping changes. And so when I said, how am I going to have to retool my life,
yeah.
to enable me to stay growing on the inside? Well, I said, I've got to divide up the leadership around here. I've got to divide up the preaching around here. I have to divide up a lot of the functions that I do around here that other people are going to have to do. And it catapulted us, as you well remember, Lee, it catapulted us into team leadership and to team preaching and to sort of team management in ways that we had never done it before.
You're talking about first recalibrating and the central priority of your relationship with Christ, and then saying, you know, what changes are necessary for me to be able to maintain that growing relationship with Christ and do ministry flowing out of that. These were not minor deals. I mean, I think the general wisdom in the church world was that you were committing suicide through team teaching.
Hey,
not a good idea.
Yeah, I'll never forget going to a church consultant who's widely known around the world as being a very bright person when it comes to what it takes to build an effective church. And I laid it out to him how I imagined it, and he said, that'll be a disaster. I drove away from that session, and I thought, well, I know what continued solo leadership and solo preaching is going to do to me, because I see what it's done in the past. I mean, it's just about destroyed the church in my heart. It's just about ruined my life. I am not going to do that. So the only question is, will I just leave ministry and turn Willow over to some other solo leader to have the church and its demands destroy him or her in 5 or 10 years? I can do that, and then I'll just move into something less demanding and get my life straightened out, rebuild the church in my own heart, and go to heaven. I said, or maybe before I leave ministry and allow the inevitable to happen to someone else in solo leadership, maybe I'll just make a good run at this team thing anyway and just find out. Just, again, sort of bet the farm and find out. And so I ran it by the elders and the boards and the various leadership bodies around the church here, and they did, I think, a very high integrity thing. First thing they said is, Bill, you cannot do God's work in a way that destroys His work in you. We support you in that. We got to figure out what you can do around here that enables your heart to grow as the church heart grows. Secondly, whatever you want to try to experiment with team leadership and team teaching, just keep us posted and we'll feedback and evaluate along the way. We're with you. Let's try it. Let's not set up another solo leader to get hammered.
What would you say to those people who comment that for you to have started Willow Creek Community Church and get this ministry up and going in the early years necessitated living in crisis mode, or it never would have happened? Willow Creek would not exist today if you hadn't lived in crisis mode for those years.
When you are getting something launched, it does require enormous energy and effort. And yes, when you're planning a church, you need to give it 110%. My problem was, Lee, I wasn't giving it 110% for a couple weeks here or for a critical month or two period here. It was every day of every week of every month. And I would never recommend any other leader to do what I did to the point of excess that I did it.
You could look at it the other way, too, and say, God blessed Willow Creek greatly. And yet, what would have happened had you managed your life back then in a way that honored Him more with the balance and pace, how would Willow Creek have been blessed?
I think you bring up a good point, Lee. Had my life really found favor in the eyes of God through it having been more balanced, more open to my relationship with Him, less torn apart by the sense of the urgencies in all different directions, who knows, maybe Willow Creek would be much more of a prevailing church today than it is.
Well, how do people who are in ministry, I think there's some obvious feelings that they have that, you know, I may be living in crisis mode myself, but are there some ways that they can diagnose that pretty quickly, get to the root of it?
I think a way that you can determine whether or not you're in crisis mode is to take some people in your life, maybe your spouse, maybe your kids, maybe your closest friends, take them to a quiet place, maybe a restaurant, maybe a park, and say, I am going to give you permission to say some things to me that might be hard for me to hear, but I'm inviting you to say them anyway. Please love me enough to tell me the truth. Is my life going too fast? Are my RPMs too high? Do you perceive me as being a chronically overscheduled, overly busy person? Would you say I'm in crisis mode? And if those people, if you're in crisis mode and if those people love you deeply, they'll tell you. Yeah. Most of us don't want to ask the question because we have a sneaking suspicion what the answer is going to be, and we don't want to hear it, you see. Another drive that sort of keeps us in crisis mode patterns is that when you are effective at doing something, it tends to feed your self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, if I said, all right, I'm going to do team teaching now, team leadership, I'm going to give massive parts of this ministry away.
Yeah.
Okay? I was aware somewhere deep down that my self-esteem needs were not going to be fed like they had been fed in the past. And the trajectory of Willow might not ever be quite as exciting as it was when it was under my solo leadership and solo preaching.
You're listening to Defining Moments. This is the end of Side 1. Please turn the cassette over to continue.